This is Paul Green, political analyst for WGN Radio and chairman of the City Club of Chicago. Today we had state's attorney candidate Donna Moore talking about her qualifications for the office and moreover talking about her two opponents who don't match her qualifications. It was very hard-hitting and something I think most of the voters in Cook County would be very interested in.
Good morning, everybody. I didn't know so many people got up so early, especially on a snowy day, but perhaps you've heard the alarm bells this morning like I have. So far this year, 285 people have been shot and wounded, and 64 have been shot and killed. We are a city and a county in a crisis of violence, fear, and distrust. I have been out there, and believe me, the tension is palpable. It's in the churches, in businesses, and in schools. It's in city halls, police precincts, and county courts. It is a virulent, deadly epidemic that is eating away at the human, social, moral, and financial foundations of our community. It breeds insidious levels of despair and apathy. And no wonder. We have an incumbent prosecutor who is a serial screw-up when it comes to high-profile cases. McDonald, Kochman, Severin, Farmer, Pinex, Glenview, Williamson, Bogdalek. This is a pattern of poor judgment and cover-ups that have put our community on edge. Just think about it. When the McDonald tape was released, everyone in our county saw a crime being committed, except for Anita Alvarez. By her own admission, she had the tape 14 days after the shooting and the police reports shortly thereafter. That's probable cause for at least one indictment, maybe more if you count obstruction charges against the officers on the scene. Anita Alvarez has made a powder keg out of this case, and it has put our community at risk. If she had charged Officer Jason Van Dyke more promptly and released the tape at the bond hearing, no one would be questioning the prosecutor's eyesight or the integrity of the system. Instead, we'd be in court today and not on the streets protesting a prosecutor whose actions have engendered a public perception of unparalleled bias. Speaking of bias, think about the Kochman case. After 8 years and $2 million invoice to taxpayers for a special prosecutor, she charged a well-connected white guy with involuntary manslaughter for a one-punch fatality. And yet an unconnected black guy gets charged with first-degree murder for the same offense in a matter of days. Think about this too. Prosecutors have a duty to protect the innocent, not just convict the guilty, except for here in Cook County since Ms. Alvarez has been in charge. If you want proof, ask the Innocence Project at Northwestern or watch her embarrassing performance on 60 Minutes when she posited that DNA matches weren't enough to exonerate a person in jail for 14 years for a crime he didn't commit. To have 29 years of prosecutorial experience come down to this isn't a record. It's a disaster that has put us one gunshot away from being the next Ferguson times 10. As many of you know, I have a lot of, somebody asked me if everybody in the room are all my friends and family. Yes, it's true. As many of you know, this is the first time that I've run for elective office. And what I've learned is that the pollsters have it right. Politics has become about self-interest rather than public interest. And we are getting a big, big dose of it in this campaign. And here's how it manifests itself. When Democratic Party leaders heard that an independent former federal prosecutor, me, was going after public corruption, it caused a surge of establishment unity. The specter of a prosecutor over which they would have no control had phones ringing and minds changing all over Cook County. Suddenly, the hand-picked candidate of Joe Berrios and Tony Preckwinkle looked a whole lot better than one voters might choose. Because we sure wouldn't want anybody poking around the county for a little graft or pay to play or violations of election law, would we? So here's another thing. The race is dripping with Shakespearean irony and deceit. The irony is this. I am running for an office that owes its success or failure, as the case may be, to truth and facts. Yet the process for winning this office has devolved into misrepresentations and, in some instances, outright lies. Politics as usual. Well, I don't know about you, but for this office, I think we need a much higher standard. Truth matters a lot in this election because evidence and fact define the job. If a candidate equivocates or hides or spins, what are we saying to voters, to victims, to perpetrators? I have a response to a public records request to verify Kim Fox's trial credentials. She says, and I quote from the Sun-Times, "I've tried hundreds of cases, everything from murder to rape to drug possession and gun cases." "You mean felony cases?" the Sun-Times asks. Fox replies, "Hundreds of felony cases." But that's not what's in the state's attorney's records. In fact, this document says she tried one jury and one bench trial during her 11 years in juvenile court, and there's no record of her ever trying a murder case. In this day and age, where a football coach can get fired for inflating his resume, have we sunk so low that the standard bearer for truth and justice in our county can get away with such deceit? As a lawyer, a former state and federal prosecutor, and a state regulator who enforced gaming laws, I find this set of facts to be truly damning. Yet despite the evidence, there are many who would ignore it and let this office become the domain of a person who pays more homage to her political allies than she does to the truth. My reference to Shakespeare earlier was purposeful because I've learned another thing about politics in Cook County. It's about theater. And the drama usually comes from the sparks that fly when the candidates are on the attack. And that's how you get in the papers and on TV. They call it going negative, and I just gave you a few minutes worth. But that's not why I got into the race. I want to be state's attorney because I think the most important job that a lawyer can do is to fight for justice. I am running because, like most of you, I am fed up. I've lived in Cook County virtually my whole life, and I can't stand it when people ask me if it is safe to live in Chicago, when Maisie won't watch the 6 o'clock news because she's too scared, when our casualty rate in Chicago is higher than that in Afghanistan, and when I see pain and anguish of our neighbors who are terrorized by gun violence and disappointed by politicians who talk a lot but don't do very much. Our campaign has spent months since summer developing thoughtful approaches to the issues that are top of the mind of the voters. Everywhere we go, the ideas spark vital conversations about how to restore the integrity in our system. We have a plan, a set of strategies for reform and crime prevention. They fall into three categories: reducing gun violence, stabilizing relationships with police, dealing with the mentally ill, who are often tragically trapped in our criminal justice system. So let me start with this. People in Cook County want a prosecutor who is tough on crime. They want to know that their chief prosecutor will follow the evidence wherever and to whomever it leads. And they want a prosecutor who will never, ever let politics, race, uniform, or money triumph over justice. I start here because people have lost faith in the state's attorney's office to do the right thing. One way to restore that faith is to reverse the pattern of secrecy and the culture of case processing that has infected the office. We need to replace these with transparency and individual case management, with greater discretion and with certain knowledge that doing good means doing what is right. Gun violence is at the top of my list and at the top of everybody else's list, according to the polls. The statistics are overwhelming. Last year in Chicago, 2,552 people were shot and wounded. 443 were shot and killed. Every 3 hours, someone in our community falls victim to gun violence. And every 18 hours, a neighbor or child died from a gunshot. This tragic carnage is accompanied by an equal measure of social and financial consequences. The University of Chicago Crime Lab estimates that violence costs our community about $2.5 billion a year in commerce, health care, lost tax revenue, and investments. Taxpayers paid more than $165 million last year to treat gunshot victims. An average ER visit runs about $55,000. Guns are a community-wide problem, and we need a community-wide solution. So my first step will be to engage with the community and ask them to join me in this fight. I am talking about mobilizing the entire community in a Cook County Safety Alliance, where parents, principals, teachers, pastors, police, prosecutors, elected officials, public and private agencies, and businesses can come together to beat back this awful plague in our county. One of my first actions in office is going to be to call together the leaders of all 128 police departments in this county to share ideas and develop action strategies for gun violence reduction. This is broader than anything that currently exists, and it means an end to the closed-door era that Anita Alvarez has with our communities. In 90% of the cases where gun violence occurs, the guns used to commit these crimes were obtained illegally, and yet 75% of the people arrested never see the inside of a jail cell. We have to change this trajectory. I will work to open a dedicated gun court so that prosecutors, judges, and police go after career offenders and traffickers, tighten cases against them, and put them behind bars. I will work to disrupt the market for illegal guns. I want to get to the source of illegal sales and transfers, hold sellers accountable, and get witnesses to trust us so they will come forward. I will use the grand jury to help us work our way up the food chain that is our gun trade. And I will support assault weapons legislation to tighten our hold on sales and possession. You know, everywhere I go in Cook County, another question I get is, how can we do a better job at handling police shootings? My answer is straightforward. First, get IPRA out of the way of the state's attorney's office. IPRA, the Independent Police Review Authority, they are a creation without legal authority. It is the state's attorney's duty, not IPRA's, to determine if a crime has been committed. When I am state's attorney, I will work to establish a new procedure, one where a fatal police shooting will be treated as a crime until the state's attorney, not IPRA, says it isn't one. And if I can't get that agreement, I will head to Springfield and work with our legislators to pass a law. By the way, IPRA has a lot to answer for. Since 2004, the city has paid out $642 million in awards for police misconduct. That's just about enough money to cover the hole in the city budget. Next, I'm going to start a new unit in the office made up of former assistant U.S. attorneys, assigned exclusively to police shootings. They won't work with police on any other matters, and they will report directly to me. They will be first responders to a police shooting. They will lead the investigation, and they will get real-time evidence. They will have their own grand jury to compel police testimony, hopefully truthful police testimony. They will release tapes when they're made public in the course of a criminal proceeding. They will make charging recommendations, and I will decide whether to charge or not to charge, and I will issue a report explaining my decision, of course, without jeopardizing the integrity of my case. Finally, I'm going to change the way that our justice system deals with mental illness. Currently, one-third of the inmates in Cook County Jail are mentally ill. The Atlantic magazine calls our jail the nation's largest mental health care facility, and that is not a compliment. So here is where I'll start. I will change the senseless practice of filling our jails with the wrong people and, worse, creating repeat offenders. That means changing bonding, charging, and sentencing policies to reflect the crime rather than satisfy a metric on conviction rates. Sheriff Dart has done a good job of alleviating some of our mental health issues, but he can't do much once an arrestee is in lockup. So I want to intervene earlier. With the help, I've had many discussions with my friends over at Lydia Healthcare. We've developed a way to have nurse practitioners with mental health expertise triage low-level, nonviolent offenders at the point of arrest. So instead of having someone carted off to lockup, where our cost is $147 a day, where he's taken off his meds and left to regress to behaviors that the meds are designed to alleviate, we send this person to a licensed mental health care facility where, for $110 a day, he can get treatment while awaiting bond court or trial, get back on proper medication, and then appear in court with the help of the facility. The idea is to make people more stable for their hearing dates so we can reduce the alarming rate of recidivism that drain hope from these patients and money from our pocketbooks. In the end, offenders get help, jails make room for the most dangerous among us, and taxpayers save money. It's the kind of policy we desperately need, and I intend to work with not-for-profit and private sector partners so the system delivers professional help rather than delivering us repeat offenders. So I want to close by urging all of you to pay close attention to the state's attorney's race. It's not just that there's a national spotlight on this race. The fact is if we don't get this right, if we don't elect a prosecutor who follows the evidence and not influence, we will be in great jeopardy. The unrest, the tension, the perilous lack of confidence will deepen. So here's what I think you should ask yourself as you head to the polls on March 15th. Do I vote for an incumbent whose charging delays, wrongful convictions, and cover-ups have torn the community apart and cost us millions of dollars? Do I vote for someone who inflates her credentials, who never walked in the shoes of a felony prosecutor, whose judgment may be clouded by her political alliances, and who has been tied to pay-for-play and election law violations? Do I vote for any candidate who doesn't have plans to deal with the most pressing problems in our criminal justice system? Gun violence, police relationships, public corruption, mental health. Do I vote for a candidate who doesn't trust herself to deal with police shootings without federal intervention and expensive special prosecutors? Or do you vote for me, the only candidate in the race who was a federal prosecutor, the only candidate in the race who doesn't have a political boss and who tells truth to power? The only candidate in the race with a plan for changing the way we deal with fatal police shootings, and the only candidate in the race who believes strongly in the court of justice and the higher court of conscience. If you choose the latter, and obviously I hope you will, your vote will send a message to the power brokers that you want to see an end to politics as usual, and it's time to have a chief prosecutor that will be tough on crime no matter who commits it. Thank you. Okay.
But before we start, hard to believe Jay didn't introduce all the people he should have. No. Former judge Freddie Foreman, stand up there, Lake County. And a man who gave me an infinite amount of enjoyment watching him work, Sam Adams Jr. Oh, come on, Sam, stand up there. No speech. The trial of the century. All right, here we go. I lost my spot. Easy. There we go. All right. So always start off with a softball. There's more. Doug Cameron, what motivated you to run for office? Don't have to give the whole speech, but.
Well, it's where I started my legal career, and I grew up as a prosecutor. And as I mentioned, the past 7 years watching the office deteriorate and our criminal justice system deteriorate led me to believe that I had really no choice but to go back into the public sector. And I have just enough idealism to think that I can fix both the office and the criminal justice system. So that's why I'm doing it. I like to say I don't need a job. I have a job, but I need to go and do a job.
Okay. Another softball. We're just setting you up here. Don't worry.
Keep the softballs coming.
Joe Romano, not a member of the City Club. Normally I don't read this, but it's a good question. Other than Kim Fox, does any attorney say a NOLA, or a plea of guilty is a trial? Boy, what a... Go ahead. Go get him.
You know, we've had a lot of discussions about qualifications, and qualifications are important because this office is about credibility, integrity, and truth. So while that may be how Ms. Fox defines a trial, I don't think there's any trial lawyer who defines a trial to include cases you dismiss, cases you plead out, or even pretrial motions in a case. So she and I probably disagree on that definition.
Little dig there, but we this is the City Club. Not only do we appreciate it, we enjoy it. All right. Boy, this Hyatt Regency table, they don't even grin. All right, here we go. Char Rivette, Chicago Children's Advocacy Center. Good handwriting. What improvements will you make to ensure efficient and effective prosecution of child sexual abuse victims? Over 2,000 cases reported annually. I spoke too soon. Oh. Only a small percentage are originally charged.
You know, our juvenile system is tough, and we have to make some reforms in the juvenile system. Under Ms. Alvarez, and frankly, Ms. Fox was in juvenile court for 11 years and a supervisor for 5 of Anita's 7 years, and no reforms were really made at all in juvenile. You know, there's a number of things that we have to do. First is, when you're not concerned about conviction rates, it's much easier to do what's right and to charge a case. You know, juvenile cases are tough when you have sexual abuse or sexual assault cases because your victim is a young boy or girl. And sometimes those are tough cases to prove, but you can't let the fear of not getting a conviction stop you from actually charging the case. So, again, it's a change in philosophy that I would institute in the office, which is, you know, we're going to take cases, we're going to take tough cases if we feel the evidence is there. But, you know, in juvenile cases, we're going to go and we're going to fight the good fight and not worry about whether we get a conviction rate if we believe we have the evidence.
A quick reminder, we have a couple of questions here where people did not sign their names. This is the City Club. If you can't sign your name to the question, Here, take these back, Amanda, and see if the people who give them to you will sign their names. If not, they won't be asked. We sandbag, but we sandbag with a little cojones here, okay? Don't try and mess with the moderator. All right, Angela Rudolph. Nice. Oh, beautiful. Cook County Justice for Children. What is your opinion of the CCSAO?
You know what that is? County State's Attorney.
Oh. Moderator.
I'm the urban translator, Gator. Sorry. Took your job.
Moderator occasionally has a slight slip. All right. What is your opinion of the Cook County State's Attorney's Office, Juvenile Justice Division, and handling of juvenile docket? Do you envision changes, or do you plan to stay the course? That's a tough question. Yeah. I'm sure you can handle it, though.
Well, I envision changes. What I'd like to see over there, you know, the dockets are pretty large. But what I envision is trying to make some separation between our juveniles that come over and get entangled into the system who are either first offenders or low-level offenders, because the answer and what we define as punishment is often different. So punishment may be not going to juvie detention, but it may be going to a not-for-profit who has staff and money to be able to run a three-hour after-school homework program every day. It may be going to a union that runs a training program for 15 and 16-year-olds. So what we do is we take these young offenders who we think we can rehabilitate, and rather than throw them in jail and create a situation where over 50% will come into an adult courtroom, we actually try to change the course and have them get into programs that keep them out of the criminal justice system, because ultimately that's our goal. So that's one major change I'd make in the juvenile system.
Scott Zelia, adjunct law professor, and U of I, a lot of places. From an education and experience, why do you believe that you are the most qualified candidate? 25 words or less.
Ask my mother. you know, I think what my two opponents have shown me is 29 years in one office as a prosecutor doesn't mean that you're a good leader and have good judgment in how to handle cases. And yet I also think that no experience in a felony trial division prosecuting juries and making real decisions, tough charging decisions, sentencing recommendations, that's not good for the state's attorney either. So I think that I have a broad breadth of experience that gives me a perspective, not just tunnel vision. And I think that the other most important thing I bring is independence. Because if you cannot make a charging decision without the influence of outside political types, you will not get good justice. And we see that in the McDonald case. We've seen that in other cases. And it doesn't change just because you change the face of the person who's in the office. It only changes if you elect somebody who's independent.
This is from Suhail. Close enough, Mr. Khan. How do you work across state lines with Northwest Indiana to stem the tide of loophole guns into the city and county?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Indiana is the major funnel for how guns are coming into our community. And, you know, the thing that I find most amazing when I talk to people about what's going on is that there is no communication. And people, you know, officers of the law who are vested in what's going on, don't talk to each other. We need a comprehensive plan, and we need to work with the officials in Indiana because, you know, they're facing some of the same issues on a much smaller scale. So the first thing you have to do is actually sit down with your counterparts and start to shine a light on what's going on and hopefully stem the tide.
Okay, now we're getting some serious stuff here. Uh-oh. Lawrence Savengros. You speak of engaging the mental health community in programs, but you are on record of supporting Governor Rauner, who plans to cut funding for such programs. How do you reconcile this decision?
I'm also on record for supporting Tony Preckwinkle, who raised my taxes. So my So, you know, we all have contributions that we regret. But, you know, I don't even agree with myself 100% of the time. So I'm not in agreement with the funding cuts for mental health. And obviously, when I think about how I'm going to do things in the state's attorney's office, I assume that I'm not going to get an increased budget from the Cook County Board. I hope I get some grants federally to deal with mental health issues. But that's why I'm very cognizant of making sure that when I'm looking at how to do things, you know, I see the float between $110 a day and $147 a day to be able to give me the budget wherewithal to be able to hire a mental health care nurse practitioner to be able to do some of these exams. So, again, I'm very cognizant of budget constraints, and I will try to do my best within them.
The final question from Graham Grady, Taft Law, and, of course, a graduate of Von Steuben High School, which we
and always, a former assistant U.S. attorney.
Well, Von Steuben High School trumps that.
Okay. Sorry, Graham.
5039 North Kimball. Here we go. They say that Chicago ain't ready for reform. Do you believe the voters are ready for reform? To end.
That's right. Well, I hope so, because that's why I'm running. I am, you know, everybody when I first decided to do this said, well, we don't understand why you're running. Why do you want to do this? And apparently my answer about fixing the system and fixing the office, they didn't understand that. You know, I don't want, people said, well, just go run for judge. I said, but I don't want to be a judge. And they said, well, what do you want to do after this? I said, well, the state's attorney is not a stepping stone. I just want to go to the office, do the job, put a self-imposed term limit on myself. I want to go there, if I'm lucky enough, 8 years, fix it, and then I'm done. So I hope the voters are ready for reform. I think it would send a real message to our political leaders who may not be ready for a new kind of voter. So I just want to say I'm happy Graham is in the audience. He worked with me in the U.S. Attorney's Office. Charlie Gardner worked with me at the Gaming Board. And Fred Foreman was the U.S. Attorney when I left the U.S. Attorney's Office. And apparently I am old enough where the state's attorney's office did not keep my records when you do a FOIA request. And so one of my opponents has accused me of really not being a lawyer at all anymore. So I'm glad that I have some people here that can account for my life when I was a youngster. So thank you all very much.